Welcome to Soul Guided Leadership with Dr. Laurel Geis, CEO of the Geis Group.
Soul Guided Leadership is a personal and professional strategy empowering you to lead from your soul while helping others to do the same. Dr. Laurel's expert guests are committed to sharing tips, tools, and techniques to inspire you to be a soul guided leader. And here's your host.
Welcome to Soul Guided Leadership. I'm your host, Dr. Laurel Geis, and our guest today is Dr. Erica Brown, an educator and author of Take Your Soul to Work, 365 Meditations on Everyday Leadership. And Dr. Brown has degrees from Yeshiva University, the University of London, Harvard University, and the Baltimore Hebrew University. She lectures and writes widely on subjects of spiritual interest and leadership. And we're so excited that she's here with us today to share insights and meditations from her new book, Take Your Soul to Work. So welcome, Erica. It's so wonderful to have you on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I have to tell everyone, this book, Take Your Soul to Work, is my new favorite book. I love this book so much. I'm going to highly recommend that everyone get this book right now. I'm going to recommend it several times during our conversation today because it is so insightful. I've never seen anything like it, especially, you know, for me coming from the corporate world and bringing Soul Guide leadership into corporate America. So, Erica, let's start a little with your background. Could you share with us the journey that really inspired you to write Take Your Soul to Work?
Certainly. Thanks for asking. My academic field is Bible. I actually wrote my PhD on a commentary, 16th century commentary in the Book of Esther, kind of far away from this. But actually, on writing about leaders from a biblical perspective, I began to think a lot about leadership. And I noticed that in the corporate world and in the nonprofit world where I worked, people had lots of different leadership programs, leadership development programs, but they really weren't touching the inner life. And where I thought a lot of the big decisions, transformation takes place. And so for the past, I would say, about 15 years, I've been thinking a lot about leadership. I've been teaching a lot about it, and a lot of the people that I teach, I think that there's a hunger that's very deep within, very profound, to make more meaning and find more purpose at work. And yet there wasn't a lot of time to be reflective or to read. As you know from the corporate sector, people aren't giving you time off to kind of sit on a mountain and contemplate nirvana. So what I tried to do was create basically a sort of devotional for people of the spirit, not necessarily with any particular religious denomination or commitment, but really 250 words a day and a little personal challenge to just start the day, frame the day differently, dig deeper, think more carefully about others, be more compassionate, be more kind, and that was the idea.
And, you know, and I really love that because I think you hit on it right away. It's, you know, as busy executives, you know, we don't have a lot of time to really spend on that focus. And, you know, to be able to pick up a book like yours and see, you know, like you said, 250 words, it's something I can read in a very short amount of time, and every single day has a challenge. And it gives me that momentary break from, and I can, you know, read from this book as I start my day or during the day or at the end of the day. And that's what I loved about the way that you presented this. And, you know, teaching leadership from a spiritual perspective, you know, that to me is my passion in life. And, you know, it's an interesting approach. And why do you think leading from your soul is so important, particularly today?
Well, I think when you know, there's not a page in the newspaper today, particularly not in the business sections of newspapers, that doesn't talk about scandal and people taking certain moral shortcuts in order to gain, you know, financial benefits or fame or status. And I think the world of Twitter and Facebook gives people a certain platform for self-exposure, which doesn't always curtail ego needs. In fact, if anything, it gives people a platform for expressing their egos in different ways. We have a Jewish concept called tzimtzum. It's a mystical concept of self-contraction, that in order to make room for the other, you sometimes have to contract the self. And that's hard to do in today's society. So I think it's somewhat counterintuitive. But if you speak to people, particularly people who've been working, I would say, for 20 plus years, you know, they've got the grind of work. They've gotten to where they want to be in terms of promotions and perhaps financially. And now there's a certain settling and a dulling of the senses. And that's when I think it's important to kick in this other sort of more transcendent push for what you're doing at work, who you're affecting, who you're mentoring, how you're influencing people, what your sphere of influence is.
Yeah, I love that, and that's true. You know, because I work with a lot of corporate leaders, and myself, I was in corporate positions for 30 years, so I know how that can become, that we become more focused on the work, on the outer work, let us say, than the inner work. And, you know, we talked about, you know, teaching leadership from a spiritual perspective. So how would you define spirituality?
That's a great question. I do tackle that question in the introduction because obviously, you know, someone looks at this and says, oh, this is kind of religious, and I'm not a religious person. So I actually want to read what I wrote, if you don't mind. It says, for the purpose of this book, we'll define spirituality as an inner platform for insight, mindfulness, and intention regarding self and others. The spiritual life calls us to lead and serve others with tenderness and generosity. In a world where the self often comes first, spiritual leadership acknowledges both the presence of others and also our profound need to live in greater harmony. At the same time, growing a healthy spiritual practice requires us to spend time alone, integrating what we know about good leadership with who we are. If your leadership is a service, then serve others as best you can, from a place of strength, authenticity, integrity, and wholeness. Spiritual leadership thrives on attentive listening, compassion, optimism, and hope. It requires an understanding that humility is more important than ego.
We'll just let that sink in for a moment. And, you know, and I love that. I love that approach, you know, the strength and the authenticity.
Can I ask you a question? When you were in the corporate sector, what did you find was the biggest challenge for you from a spiritual perspective?
I think for me, the biggest challenge that I had was actually the integration of the my spiritual life into the corporate life. You know, I felt that my life was very compartmentalized for many years. There was my corporate life, my C-level positions where I was, you know, leading in the corporation. And then at the same time, I was walking a path of, you know, I learned meditation, then I became a meditation instructor, then I pursued a doctorate of ministry and, you know, just became one of, you know, just wanted to learn so much about the wisdom traditions of the world. And for me, that was the real challenge, was integrating the two. And how I've resolved that is now I teach mindfulness and meditation and soul-guided leadership in organizations so that people can really have that experience and understand that you can literally interweave those two disciplines. They don't have to be separate. And that's why I was so excited about your book, Erica. And I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Soul Guided Leadership with Dr. Laurel Geis. And today our guest is Dr. Erica Brown, author of Take Your Soul to Work, 365 Meditations on Everyday Leadership. And we've been sharing insights from her new book. And after this short commercial break, we're going to talk about Erica's leadership in bringing soul and spirituality into the workplace. So stay tuned, everyone. We'll be right back.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.
Are you ready to discover a personal and professional leadership strategy to improve your performance, productivity, and well-being? Soul Guided Leadership is a thought-leading strategy combining mindfulness principles, meditation practices, and management tactics, empowering you to lead from your soul while helping others to do the same. Contact
CEO Dr. Laurel Geis at www.thegeisgroup.com
and be a Soul Guided Leader today.
You're listening to Vivid Life Radio Talk Radio that connects you to the most current, optimistic, and inspiring conversations on the planet. Get ready to be catapulted into your happiest, healthiest, and wealthiest life ever. Go to vividlife.me. That's vividlife.me for details on our previous and upcoming conversations with the world's brightest minds sharing their wisdom for happier, healthier, and wealthier lives.
You're listening to Soul Guided Leadership with Dr. Laurel Geis, and our guest is Dr. Erica Brown, author of Take Your Soul to Work, 365 Meditations on Everyday Leadership. And before the break, Erica was sharing insights from her new book with us. So welcome back, Erica. We're just thrilled to have you with us here today.
Thank you, and thank you for giving me a break so I could let my dogs out. They wanted to contribute to the interview also.
Yeah, I could hear them. They were excited.
My apologies.
No worries. So, Take Your Soul to Work, beautiful book. I highly recommend everyone getting a copy today. Don't wait. Get a copy. Take Your Soul to Work is described as essentially a prayer book for leaders. And I have to ask, you know, do you feel that religion plays a role in the book?
Religion plays a huge role in my life. So, of course, any writer can't divorce that or shouldn't divorce that, your life from what you write. For me, as you had said, you know, the challenge of integration is always present. So how do you take what you would experience in a sanctuary or in a mosque or in a church and say, how do I do this in the corner office? Or how do I become a more thoughtful person in my cubicle and not have these as compartmentalized, bifurcated worlds? And so that was certainly a primary interest of mine in writing this. I will say that there are contributions from a wealth of religious leaders, Hinduism to Judaism to Christianity to Buddhism to Jainism. I felt that I needed to really encapsulate so many spiritual traditions and wisdom literature that I learned from, but equally present are the thoughts of master politicians, of great artists, of wonderful writers and dancers who really have tapped into something great and creative and transcendent. And I think that they belong here as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, in reading through the book, you do see that there is perennial wisdom, you know, from Buddha, from Jesus, but we also have Abraham Lincoln and Andrew Carnegie, and I just love that blend of the wisdom traditions and with business and political leaders. And, you know, how were you guided to choose the topics for the daily meditations?
Yeah, that's such a great question. So when I wrote the book and I had the idea and I presented it to Simon & Schuster, who were my publisher, I presented 100 meditations, and he said, that's great, you have 265 to go. And I hadn't planned on doing one for every day of the year. But actually, I loved that idea of making them a little bit shorter and making them for, you know, kind of a daily gift for the reader. So I'm a big reader, and the first 100 were easy. I would say the second 100 also pretty much came easy. And, you know, the last 165, it's hard to come up with a different topic for every day of the year. And it was a great challenge for me because it's not as if they don't exist. You just have to mine the depths of literature, and you have to read more, and you have to pay attention more. And so paying attention is such a big part of my own spiritual practice that it kind of came naturally when I started to think about it in relation to the book.
Beautiful. So the book is organized into 365 daily meditations. So, you know, why this approach to sharing the wisdom?
Honestly, I think that I'm someone who prays every day, and you know, you take a few minutes out of the day. Many people don't pray, but many people want to start their day with either meditation or some kind of quietness. And I felt that I'm a person who believes very much in daily disciplines. I read a poem every day. I study a page of the Talmud every day. I exercise every day. I think, you know, you want to be who you want to be every day of your life. And so for me, organizing it this way presented the opportunity to give that little push on an everyday way. As I said, and I think you've confirmed, you know, you can go to a retreat and have a wonderful experience and then come back, and they're two very isolated experiences that never really come together into the integrated person. And I didn't want
Exactly. It's that integration. It's that, it's erasing those lines that we have as we compartmentalize our life, right? To really blend that life, to become that union of the inner and the outer life. And, you know, in the introduction, you talk about a book of hours. Could you explain what a book of hours is to our listeners?
Sure. A book of hours, I suppose they originate, or their popularity is really in the medieval world of the spiritual medieval world of Christendom, and specifically the Roman Catholic Church would have like a primer, and they would have a service for every day of the year with some adjustments for holidays and seasons. And so we do have books that survive from this period. Very often wealthy people would give them as gifts to members of their family or on special occasions. Many of them were personalized, and they had names and sometimes engravings of their owners. But sometimes they were just very plain. And grooms might have given them as wedding presents. Parents gave them to children. And these were special. If you imagine that you took every prayer that you loved and you put it together in something and you gave it as a gift to someone, well, what a precious, precious gift that would be. Sort of almost like an ethical will that was given from one generation to another. So this precious gift would be given, and it would inspire people to read through it every day. And that's kind of when I came across this idea. Actually, in the 15th century in Italy, I saw prayer books which had blank faces, and the idea was that you were supposed to insert, if you will, your own face. Imagine your own face. And I loved that idea, and that was really an animating force for this book.
I love that. And I noticed that in the book, the meditations are actually numbered. They're not arranged by dates.
No, they're not. Because I didn't want people to feel like a calendar. Oh, my goodness, I'm not going to buy, you know, New Year's Day calendars. The day, you know, it's January 2nd, and you can get them for 50% off. It's as if we're erasing the year already. And I think the idea here was wherever you start, just keep going for that year. In fact, at the conclusion of the book, I'm not giving anything away because it's no big cliffhanger, but at the conclusion of the book, I mentioned if there's not going to be a volume 2, just go back to the beginning, because these are always things that we're challenged by, and we're always bringing a new self into a new year. So wherever you start, that's fine. I didn't want anyone to feel penalized because they got the book, you know, they got the book in March, or they got the book in the middle of the summer.
Right.
Just start where life starts. You know, you don't have to wait for a specific time.
Yeah, I like that so much. And you know, for me, I'm the type of person who tends to pick up a book like this and then just, you know, let my soul guide me to the page to read that day. And I love that flexibility of the book too. So I have to ask you, and I know this is probably going to be a tough question because there's 365 entries here, but which one is your favorite?
Oh my gosh! I don't know. You know, it's interesting. I like the one on resonance. I think that is. I think about the capacity for leaders to resonate with others through the intentionality on their work. I like the one on flow. I think a lot about personal responsibility, on intensity. You know, it's hard for me because I love all of them in different ways. I think that's also the beauty of this, is when you return to ideas, you realize that sometimes something doesn't hit you, but a day later, it's kind of has some staying, lingering power with you. and you're thinking about it, I will say that one of the things that, you know, someone said to me, why did you make this a book for leaders? Why couldn't it be anywhere? Why did it have to be work? Why did it have to be leadership? And honestly, if you're working at home and you're raising your family, you're also leading. So I don't want to be strict about the definition, but I do really mm-hmm. care about the way that people in leadership positions have power over other people. And so many crimes, so many pains and insults are caused by the power that one person has over another. So I was really interested in power and personal responsibility. And I would say that, you know, if you go through the table of contents, you'll notice that theme keeps coming back in very subtle ways. Because,
you know,
I'm trying to get people to serve people as opposed to
yes,
exerting
to
power
service.
Over them.
Right, to be in service and to allow that, I always say to allow the ego to go into the back seat and let the soul come into the front seat and really
lovely.
Let that soul drive, you know, drive who you are in the world and thus soul-guided leadership. And so, you know, that's a great point, Erica, that this book is not just for leaders. It can benefit many people in many different roles in life, because we're all role models in some way, and
absolutely.
We're all, you know, in our lives in that way. So that's beautiful. And I wanted to ask, what is the best advice that you've ever received?
The best advice that I've ever received. Oh my
yeah.
gosh. I've received so much. I want to do the teacher thing and put that back at you.
Yeah.
But that's not fair, although I do want to know.
I'm going to throw it right back at you. But I just, looking at all of the wisdom in this book, I just know that you've been given a lot of good advice over the years
yeah.
of your journey. And is there one thing that...
So actually, I will say, I think this is the challenge of the digital age, is to be fully present. I think that when I think about the ways in which that statement applies, as a supervisor, as a friend, as a parent, as a spouse, as a neighbor, you know, it's so hard to be present. And I think about this a lot as a student of the Bible, when mm-hmm. there's an expression in Hebrew, hineni, I am here. And I like to translate as I am fully present. So when you're tasked with something and you answer hineni, I'm fully present to serve in this moment. And I think about that a lot. Isaiah in the chapter 6, verse 8 says, hineni shelacheni, here I am, send me, when God is looking for a leader. And it's really the ultimate call of service is I'm here to serve. So I think between the idea of being fully present and being fully present with readiness to serve, if we all lived our lives, even part of every day that way, this world would
mm-hmm.
be such a more special, holy, compassionate, loving place.
Yes, it would. Oh, and that gave me goosebumps. And I very much resonate with that, because that's my work, bringing mindfulness and present moment awareness into organizations. So I knew you were a soul sister of mine as soon as I picked up your book, Erica.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it. Actually, you know, it's funny because we've been home for many days. We're stuck in a snowstorm. I hope you guys are okay where you are. And I've been thinking, how do you take your soul to work when there's no work? And just even emailing or calling a colleague, checking out how people are doing, you know, do people mm-hmm. have power? Are they snowed in? Do they want company? Can you give them something? Can you get them something? You know, there's ways to connect even when you can't go to work that are ways of service.
Absolutely. And I have one final question for you. You know,
sure.
Soul Guided Leadership, our show, is actually airing on the Vivid Life Network. And I would like to ask you, what does your vivid life look like?
I think it's when I'm doing things where I feel, as William James said, I am most alive. I would say, writing for me is an act of vividness. I also paint, so when I'm in the flow of that, I would say there's tremendous vividness. When I'm having, you know, when I feel very, very connected and intimately connected with people I love, that is that is such a vivid experience. And I love the word vivid and your choice of it, because it really creates this sense of vitality and when
yes.
you feel most purposeful, most alive. And we don't have that sort of passionate feeling in the course of a work day. Enough.
Well, Erica, I want to thank you for being with us on Soul Guided Leadership. And all of our listeners, you can connect with Erica at www.ericabrown.com. And her book, Take Your Soul to Work, is available at your local bookstore and also online. And I highly recommend that you get a copy. And not just one. Get a copy for yourself and get a copy for a friend, because we've got to get this book out there. In fact, I am going to start giving this book to my corporate clients, because that's how much I love it. So everyone, join
you.
Me and saying congratulations to Erica. I mean, just, it's a masterpiece. And I want to thank everyone for listening to Soul Guided Leadership today. And are you ready to be a Soul Guided Leader? Well, if you are, contact me at thegeistgroup.com. And let's talk about how our team can help you bring Soul Guided Leadership and mindfulness programs to your organization. And join me again next week for another empowering conversation on Soul Guided Leadership. So until next week, my friends, keep on leading from your soul.
Thank you for listening to Soul Guided Leadership with your host,
Dr. Laurel Geis.
To learn more about Soul Guided Leadership,
go to www.thegeisgroup.com
and connect with Dr. Laurel Geis
to find out how our team at the Geis Group
can help you today. Join us again next week for more expert tips, tools, and strategies to be a Soul Guided Leader.
What does your vivid life look like? What does it feel like to be living a vivid life every single day? How do you start? What's the first step for you personally to make the shift that you've been seeking? Find out now. Vivid Life. It's a happier, healthier, wealthier state of being. Get there today by following us on Facebook, Twitter, or subscribing to our free inspirations in your inbox at vividlife.me.